That song is talking about heaven, and that'll be a wonderful meeting. But if you think about it, that's also the best place for you and I to meet here on earth also, is around Christ at his feet. I'd like to turn to the book of Isaiah, chapter 6, very familiar passage of Scripture. We've preached many messages from this passage. There are many directions in which to go. Isaiah 6, we'll read the first 8 verses. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphims. Each one had 6 wings. With twain he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. And one cried unto another, as they were speaking to one another, and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts, and the whole earth is full of his glory. And the post of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke. Then said I, Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips. I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then flew one of the seraphims unto me, having a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with the tongs from off the altar. And he laid it upon my mouth, and said, Lo, this hath touched thy lips, and thine iniquity is taken away, and thy sin purged. And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then said I, Here am I, send me. What we read here is the record of a real event, a personal experience in the life of Isaiah. What we read here is the ongoing and desperate need of all of God's people today. What we read here is also the motivation and the mainstay for correct and continued service to God. It is our prayer that we would leave here, that we would experience what we read here in this 6th chapter of Isaiah. I'm going to speak today on a real and personal meeting with God. A real and personal meeting with God. People will say, We had a meeting with God today. I pray that you did. But there's ways to know whether that is true or not. There are some definite results of a real and personal meeting with God. And we see them here in these verses. First of all, consider the circumstances or the setting of what we read here. Isaiah, we know, was a preacher. He was a man who spoke for God to the people. That's what a preacher is. He was a preacher, and he preached, and he did so in the southern kingdom of Judah. In verse 1 in chapter 1, we learn that his ministry covered the span of 4 kings. Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. He had been called of God to preach in what would be the latter years of Judah, when the people were following the same paths that had led to the destruction of their neighbor, the northern kingdom, Israel. We learn from chapter 1 that Isaiah ministered in a very corrupt time. You read chapter 1 and it's basically a time when religion was still popular, but it was merely outward. There was no spirituality to it whatsoever. Our text opens with the words, "In the year that King Uzziah died." It may have been the day after he died. It may have been a month after. It might have been 9 months after. It might have been 12 months after. But it was in the same year that King Uzziah died. We read of Uzziah's reign. We'll not turn there, but we read of his reign in 2 Chronicles 26. And there we learn that he began his reign when he was 16 years old, and that he reigned for 52 years, or until he was 68 years old. We're told that he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, in verses 4 and 5 of that chapter, and that he sought God. And we also read in 2 Chronicles 26 and verse 5 that God made him to prosper. And reading on in that chapter, we see that God was with Uzziah in a very special way. We see that Uzziah was a very popular king. He was a very well-liked king. And during his reign, Judah was enjoying great power, prosperity, and success, unlike any that it enjoyed since the days of Solomon. We read there in 2 Chronicles 26 and verse 15, "For he was marvelously helped." That is, he was a man that was helped by God. The result was the nation was filled with confidence and hope, though they were beginning to go in the same direction as the northern kingdom. There was a sense of confidence. There was a sense of hope. Now, it's been a while, but you have a good president, and there's a sense of confidence. There's a sense of hope, and that existed during the time of Uzziah. Uzziah was leading in the right direction. He was honoring God. He was living for God. But sadly, he became proud of his prosperity, of his success. He entered into the office of the priest, and God smote him with terminal leprosy, and he died. In the year that King Uzziah died. Now, no doubt, the death of Uzziah to many, especially the God-fearing in that day, signaled the end of prosperity. And the death of Uzziah was the ushering in of uncertainty and fear and even a sense of hopelessness. It appears that once Uzziah died, that the sense of stability had died with the king. So it was a very traumatic time for the nation. The outlook of the nation, especially the God-fearing, was extremely bleak. Coming to chapter 6, I believe that Isaiah had already been serving the Lord during the reign, maybe not the entire reign, but during the reign of Uzziah. But no doubt, like the rest of the God-fearing people of Judah, he had the mindset perhaps of, what are we going to do now? Uzziah is dead. What are we going to do? Coming to chapter 6, I believe Isaiah, just like the entire nation, needed something from God. Needed something from God for his future ministry, for his future service to the Lord. If Isaiah was going to continue to serve God in a way that would be pleasing to God, he needed something from the hand of the Lord. Coming to chapter 6, Isaiah already, of course, had a relationship with the Lord. He was a good man. He was a godly man. He was serving the Lord. And he went into the temple that day because he had a need from God if he was to continue on. And it was while in that temple that God got the attention of Isaiah in a very special way. We ought to pray for that. That as individuals, that God would get our attention. He has many ways of doing so. But that God would get our attention in a very special way. So God got the attention of Isaiah. And the result was that Isaiah had a real and personal meeting with God. One that would have an impact upon the rest of his life. One that would enable him to maintain a passion and a zeal in the service and in the cause of the Lord. And it is what Isaiah experienced that ought to interest us today. This real and personal meeting with the Lord. So let's look at the personal experience of Isaiah. Notice that Isaiah, in describing the event, will not take the time, but if you read through there, you'll see that he makes use of personal pronoun ten times. 10 times. Everything about this experience is very personal. It's firsthand. It was something that was an actuality. It was something that he experienced as an individual. Reading on in the text, you see that he speaks in very certain terms. He doesn't say things like, "I saw what looked like seraphims." He said, "I saw seraphims." Everything he says is very certain. He could speak in certain terms because he was there. And he witnessed. And he saw and he felt and he experienced God that day. And he speaks in very certain terms. Now notice in verse 1, we see the initial experience. He says, "I," again it's personal, "I saw." It wasn't that someone else saw and told Isaiah what they saw. He said, "I saw." In verse 5, he says, "For mine eyes have seen." I saw, and mine eyes have seen. Reading through the text, it is obvious that what he saw, he also deeply felt and experienced. So let's see what he saw. He saw, he felt, and he experienced the Lord. From John 12 and verse 41, we read, "These things said Isaiah when he saw his glory and spake of him." So what did Isaiah, based on John 12, 41, who was it that Isaiah saw? Christ. He saw Christ. He saw Christ. He would write of Christ more than any other writer in the Old Testament. He spoke of Christ as Emmanuel, as the mighty God, as the Prince of Peace, as our strength, as our song, as our salvation, as the sure foundation. He spoke of Christ as our hiding place and as rivers of water and a dry place. He spoke of Him in Isaiah 53 as the suffering servant and as the divine substitute, as the sin bearer, and as the offering for our sin and as the satisfied Redeemer. He saw Christ that day in the temple. From our text, we see that He saw Christ as the Lord. Verse 1, I saw also the Lord. Capital L, and then small case, O-R-D. That is the Hebrew word, Adonai. I saw Christ as Adonai. Adonai means the strong and firm one. The Master. I saw Christ, he says. I saw Him. I saw Him with my own eyes. I saw Him as the strong one. I saw Him as the Master. In verse 5, he said, and mine eyes have seen the King. He saw Christ as the King. He saw Christ as the ruler, as the monarch, as the potentate. And he goes on in there, in verse 5, he says, the Lord. And there it's all capital letters. Jehovah. I saw Christ as Jehovah, the forever one, the forever self-existent one. And I saw Him as the Lord of hosts. That is, the one who is absolute sovereign, the one who is in absolute control of all the hosts. He also saw, felt, and experienced Christ's position. Notice verse 1 again. I saw also the Lord sitting. Sitting. A picture of dwelling and abiding in a state of calm. I saw the Lord sitting. Where is He sitting? He's sitting upon a throne, which is a place of authority, a place of rule, a place of dominion. And this throne, it says, is high and lifted up. So in a time of uncertainty, the year that King Uzziah died, when Isaiah needed something from God, here Isaiah, as he says, I personally saw, I personally felt, and I personally experienced Jesus Christ. I saw Him, I felt Him, I experienced Him as the strong and firm one, as the Master, as the ruler, as the potentate, as the forever one, as the absolute sovereign one, and He's in His rightful place. He's above all. He's higher than all. He's greater than all. That's what He saw. That's what He felt. That's what He experienced. An exalted Christ. He also saw, felt, and experienced Christ's person. We read in verse 1, and His train filled the temple. The word train there speaks of the border and the lower parts of His robe. And He said, and that robe and the train of that robe, the longer the train, the more dignity of the person. So the train represents dignity and beauty and glory. And the train of His robe was so immense. It was so broad that it just kept going and going and going. There was no end to it. And it filled the temple. It filled the temple. And since Isaiah was in the temple, that means that Isaiah was literally surrounded by the dignity, by the beauty, and by the glory of the Lord. When that happens, something happens to you. He also sees, has again, the beauty and the glory, the magnificence of the Lord fills the temple. And he also sees, he's still looking at that throne. And he sees some activity around the throne. We read that in verses 2 and 3. And this activity involved some seraphims. What is a seraphim? A seraphim is an angel that burns in brightness. The very word teaches us that there is degrees in the angelic world. And these seraphim, they burned in brightness, perhaps more than other angels. And he declares that each one of these angels had six wings. And then he describes what they're doing with those wings. With two of the wings, they fly around the throne. And with two, they covered their feet. And with the other two, they covered their faces. The reason they covered the feet, the reason they covered their faces was the glory of God was so bright. Even though these were seraphims, never have they sinned. But the glory of God was so bright, so amazing, so majestic, so powerful, so permeating, that these sinless angels could not look upon him and live. Isaiah in verse 3 describes the song of these seraphims. They were saying, "Holy, holy, holy." So they are singing of the holiness of the one who sits on that throne. Now, holiness, there's different aspects to holiness. One is purity. That's usually what we think of, purity. They're singing of the purity of Christ. Another aspect is perfection. They're singing of the purity and perfection of Christ. But the chief aspect of holiness, the root of holiness, is that which is separate and apart from all else. This one that sits on the throne, yes, he's pure. Yes, he's perfect. But he's separate and he's apart from all else. He's holy. These seraphims declare the excellence, the magnificence, the marvel, and the wonder of his holiness. They also sing of his sovereign control. The Lord of hosts. And they are also singing of his permeating glory. The whole earth is full of his glory. The volume of the seraphim is of such magnitude that it says it shook the doorposts of the house of God. And that is put there to just give us a picture of the awesome power that was being displayed at that moment. But more importantly than the fact that it shook the doorpost of the house, I believe it shook the very being of Isaiah. And oh, how we need a real and personal meeting with God that would shake our very being. We need that. We all need that. We see also he felt and experienced Christ's presence. It's twice stated. In verse 1, his train filled the temple. So he could feel his presence. In verse 4, and the house was filled with smoke, speaking of his surrounding presence. In other words, Isaiah was encircled by the glory of the Lord. Everywhere he turned, there was the glory of God. He was personally exposed to the glory of God. There was contact with the glory of God. There was an awareness of the glory of the Lord. This is the kind of meeting we need with God. So under the circumstances of Uzziah's death, at a time when Isaiah needed spiritual refreshment, God got his attention and he directed his focus not to an earthly king, not to an earthly place, not to earthly prosperity or riches. God did not tell Isaiah, "Isaiah, don't worry, there'll be another king and prosperity will continue." That's not what Isaiah needed. But God was saying to Isaiah, "Isaiah, don't get stuck on Uzziah. And don't get stuck on whoever's going to follow Isaiah." And God directed Isaiah's attention to himself, because God wanted Isaiah to know the best place for him to look if he was going to continue in the Lord's service was to the Lord. And that is still true today. It is as if God is saying to Isaiah, "Isaiah, if you are going to be what I have called you to be, and if you are going to do what I have called you to do, then you must see me, you must feel me, you must experience me. Everything you need, Isaiah, is in me. Isaiah, look at me, look at me, look at me." He got his attention. And then we see what Isaiah personally sensed as a result of all of this. He sensed, first of all, no doubt a sense of awe at the glory of God. But in verse 5, he says, then, after what he's described in the first four verses, said I, "Woe is me. Woe is me. For I am undone." To be undone is to be brought to nothing. Isaiah was brought to nothing upon seeing, feeling, and experiencing the Lord's person. He is brought to see, "I am nothing. I am nothing." If there were any feelings, not saying that there was, but if there were any feelings of self-importance, if there were any feelings of self-righteousness, if there were any feelings of self-sufficiency on Isaiah's part, it was undone at this moment. And in this day, when so many of God's people are impressed with their form of Christianity, impressed with their skills, impressed with their talents, impressed with their achievements, impressed in what they consider as advancements. Oh, how we need a real and personal meeting with God that would cause us to realize, "I am nothing. I am nothing." We need to be undone. Woe is me, for I am undone. How does this come about? It is the result of personally seeing, feeling, and experiencing His person. Not only did Isaiah sense that he was undone, he also sensed what he deserved at the hand of Almighty God. He said, woe, woe is me. That is, I deserve the judgment of God. Woe is me, he says, for I am a man of unclean lips. Here is a man who had been preaching the Word of God. He is brought to nothing. And he says, I am a man of unclean lips. That is, he begins to feel himself to be ungodly, to be unrighteous, to be wicked, to be infected and filthy and foul and vile. He was a godly man. But in the presence of a holy God, he says, I was undone because I am a man of unclean lips. He also knew that this was true of others also. He says, and I dwell in the midst of people of unclean lips. But notice the order is significant. He started by feeling his own sin. Woe is me, for I am a man of unclean lips. He is overcome with a sense of his own sin. And when our attention is drawn to God in such a way that we personally see, that we personally feel, and that we personally experience His person, I'm telling you, there will be an instant. There will be a painful realization that I am filthy, that I am vile, that I am abominable, and I am worthy of the judgment of God. Oh, how we need such a meeting with God. We can compare ourselves with ourselves and we can be impressed. But you have a personal meeting with God, you have nothing to be impressed with other than Him. Then notice, the order here is significant. He sensed activity, or he sensed contact from heaven. Thanks be unto God that He does not bring us to nothing and cause us to feel the filth and weight of our sins against Him and then leave us there. That's not how God works. We read in verse 6 and 7. Isaiah, he feels the weight of his sin. Then flew one of the seraphims unto me. He came to me. He had a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with the tongs from off the altar. And he laid it upon my mouth and said, lo, this hath touched thy lips. Heaven made contact with Isaiah. With Isaiah, the sinner. And oh, how we need a real and personal meeting with God that would bring us into direct contact with Him. With Him. Then notice, he sensed personal cleansing. Verse 7. Thine iniquity is taken away, and thy sin purged. There was a removal of the weight of sin. There was a healing. There was a restoration. As a result, there's an inward calm that comes upon Isaiah. There's a sense of harmony with the Lord. Now, I don't believe that Isaiah was in a wicked state. He was a godly man. But when he got into the presence of God, I don't care how godly you are, you will feel the weight of your sin. And once that sin was dealt with by God, there was an inward calm. And there was even a greater harmony with the Lord. And oh, how we need a real and personal meeting with God, in which something is done with our sin, in which we experience a healing and a restoration. Because the truth is this, we're all sick somehow. And I'm not talking physically. And we all need spiritual restoration somewhere. And all for a meeting with God that would bring about this healing and restoration. Then notice, after all that took place, he sensed an attentive sensitivity toward God's cause. Isaiah, having personally seen, felt, and experienced the preeminence of God, and having seen, felt, and experienced what he deserved from God because of his own sin and vileness, and having seen and felt and experienced contact from heaven through the grace and mercy of God, we read in verse 8, I heard the voice of the Lord. Now the voice of the seraphim shook the post of the temple. And there was something majestic about the voice of the seraphim as they flew, crying, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of His glory. But that does not compare to I heard the voice of the Lord. He hears it in a very special way. Notice that he not merely heard the voice of the Lord, but reading on, he heard what he said. You can hear someone's voice without hearing what they say. Verse 8 says, And I heard the voice of the Lord saying. So he heard what he said. He heard what he said. We need a real and personal meeting with God that would cause us to feel the significance, the seriousness, and the urgency of what God says. We need that today, desperately. He also sensed, again, there's a definite order here. He sensed an all-consuming desire to surrender unto God. He says in verse 8, He heard the voice say, Who shall I send and who will go for us? Then said I, Here I am, send me. These are words of surrender. They are words of submission to the Lord. They are words of willingness. They are words of readiness. They are words of one who is available to the Lord. One who sees the Lord now has a priority. Not saying he didn't before that, but he does in a completely different way now. They're words of love. They're words of devotion. They're words of passion, and zeal, and sincerity. They are words of purpose. Then said I, here am I. Send me. Who will go for us? Isaiah didn't even know where he was going. He just said, Lord, I'll go. Here am I. This was surrender. And may I say that this surrender was not a mere decision. It is presented today as a mere decision. This is not a mere decision. This is a result of a personal meeting with God. This will always be the result of a personal meeting with God. Again, we already saw what happened during that meeting. And now the result is surrender. You know why the lives of God's people are filled with so many trivial options rather than absolute surrender? It is because of a lack of a real and personal meeting with the Lord. You can beg people. And you can try and convince people, don't you see? You need to surrender your life to the Lord. But I'm here to tell you, unless they have a real and personal meeting with God, they'll never really, truly surrender. But once this meeting takes place, you will surrender. That is the instant result of this meeting. Oh, how we need a real and personal meeting with God that would cause us to feel the need to say, Lord, here am I. I'm here, Lord. I'm here. Whatever it is you want, wherever you want me to go, whatever you want me to do, whatever you want me to be, here am I, Lord. Here am I. Not telling God what you want. Not telling God what you expect. Not trying to fit God into your life and into your plans. But simply, Lord, here am I. Send me. That's a result of a real and personal meeting with God. In closing, as a child of God, you cannot experience what Isaiah experienced in our text and be spiritually indifferent. It's not possible. If you are spiritually indifferent today, you need a real and personal meeting with God. You cannot experience what Isaiah experienced and be satisfied with spiritual mediocrity. That will not happen. Once you have this real and personal meeting with God, you can't be satisfied with spiritual mediocrity. You cannot be satisfied with superficial and mechanical religion. You cannot experience what Isaiah experienced and remain unexcited and unmoved and uncommitted. It's not possible. Oh, how we need a real and personal meeting with God. Here's what happens many times. People will go from church and say, oh, I could feel the Lord's presence. And they go out and they live a life of sin. You didn't have what Isaiah had. You experience what Isaiah experienced, you will not leave here unchanged. Here we are in a world that's getting worse by the day and at an accelerated pace. Here we are in a country that has and is eliminating biblical principles upon which we were founded. And here we are in a time of grievous spiritual coldness and discouragement. A time when faith is severely tried. You witness and you watch your loved ones who once professed to believe the truth, and you watch them walk away from God and live a life of shame and filth. It's a trying of faith. And we desperately, we need something from God. We desperately need to continually see and feel and experience what we read in our text. We don't just need this one time. We need this every day. We need to live in Isaiah 6 every day. What a wonderful place to live. I ask you today, do you desire a real and personal meeting with God? Are you willing to pray for such? Lord, I know that others need it. But Lord, there isn't anyone that needs it more than I do. Lord, meet with me. Meet with me in a real and personal way. We ought to pray that. We ought to pray that God would get our attention. Now, many people have the wrong idea of God getting their attention. God has many ways of getting our attention. He can do so, and this is the way most people think. He can send what we would consider a catastrophe in our life. But is it really a catastrophe if it gets your attention? No, it's not. But that's one way God can get our attention. That's not the only way God gets our attention. In fact, it's not even the most common way. God many times just taps us on the shoulder. Gets our attention. And He says, look at me. Look at me. And when you look at Him, you're immediately overcome with a sense of awe. And immediately, you're undone. You become as nothing. You become as nothing. Isaiah, though he did, after he mentioned his own sin, he said, I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. That's not where he began. No, when you have this personal meeting with God, it'll always begin with my sin. That's where it'll begin. We need this real and personal meeting with God. This needs to be our life. We need to continually meet with the Lord. Nothing greater. What a wonderful experience in this life that God meets with us. That God would meet with me, that God would meet with you. His grace, His mercy. That is the grace of God. However it is that God gets my attention, that's a gracious act of God. That's a merciful act of God. Would you pray today that God would give you, grant you a meeting, a real and personal meeting with God? Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us, verse of song.